Welcome to episode 7. I speak again with my friend Maru Farouk, who is an AI engineer at NVIDIA. No, Maru's views are his alone and not his employer's. In this episode, we talk about AlphaGo, created by the company DeepMind. It's an AI that plays the board game Go. In the game of Go, players take turns placing black and white tiles on a 19 by 19 grid. The number of board positions in Go is greater than the number of atoms in the observable universe. Sounds like a great problem for AI, right? Maruf and I discuss a documentary, AlphaGo, which tells the story of AlphaGo and its opponent, human Go champions. During the matches, two mind-blowing moves emerge. In game 2, move 37, AI does something its human opponent doesn't expect. And in game 4, move 78, the human Go champion does something AI doesn't expect. Who will you cheer for, man or machine? Please enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Super Prompt Podcast. Join me, your host, Tony Wan, as I go under the hood with AI experts, engineers, and entrepreneurs to explore burning questions, pitfalls, and best practices. Whether you're inside the industry or not, I hope to reveal something you haven't yet discovered. We laugh, we cry, we iterate. For early adopters of generative AI.
I recently watched this AlphaGo documentary. I know it's not your domain expertise, but I figure you would know more than me, which will be, I think, still quite interesting. Have you seen the documentary, Maruf?
Yes, Tony. I watched it, and it's kind of the way the matches go.
So first off, like, who are you rooting for? Were you rooting for AlphaGo, or were you rooting for the human Go players?
Initially, I was more like, let's see who wins. I want the match to be leveled so that, you know, AlphaGo was doing way better than Lee Sedol, and I just wanted Lee Sedol to win at least one match. So it was kind of a mixed thing for me.
The producers of AlphaGo did a really great job because I found myself rooting for AlphaGo in the very beginning. But then as the big match with Lee Sedol started, I started to switch. I wanted Lee Sedol to win because you can really identify with him. You can't really identify with the machine. I found myself rooting for him. And man, I was so happy that he won. So I thought I'd begin by asking, is there a general kind of AI that AlphaGo is, or is it its own unique kind of AI? Is there a general category of AI that it belongs to?
It does not belong to any general category. It has multiple types of AIs that they use within AlphaGo itself. So one is supervised learning, the other one is reinforcement learning.
Okay. So to help us understand the difference between supervised learning and reinforcement learning.
So at a very high level, supervised learning is when you have data labeled. Like, you know, in previous episode, we talked about hot dog versus not a hot dog example, right?
For people who haven't seen that episode, that was the first episode, and we talked about an AI that can distinguish between what is a hot dog and not a hot dog from the sitcom Silicon Valley. And so in that case, we have a lot of data that's labeled. Why don't we just call data that's labeled Dables?
Dables.
Dables. You're going to be in a meeting and you're going to accidentally say Dables.
Dables.
That's labeled data. But it's very simplistically labeled, well, it's either a hot dog or not a hot dog. So in this case, if there's supervised learning for a Go game, what aspects of the data would be labeled?
So in this particular problem, you have data set containing Go moves from professional players. So how did, like, you know, other professional players play a certain state of board? So you have that data stored somewhere, and the label is, like, you know, predicting what the next move is, which is the expert play of that particular board?
Okay. So I see. The data would be all the Go pieces positions on the board. And then the label would be the next move chosen by a professional player.
Correct.
And so basically when the AI is trying to predict the next move, it can compare it against what a professional Go player did.
Correct.
Okay. But there could be many moves that a professional player could have played. Maybe there's a handful of moves that a professional player... So I guess it's a pretty vast data set, actually.
Yeah, there are about like 30 million moves in that particular data set. So given the current state of the board, like, you know, how the pieces are placed, what mm-hmm. the expert play. So whatever the expert plays the label, and that's what you're training the network to predict.
Okay. Then you mentioned reinforcement learning. So what is reinforcement learning and how is it different than supervised learning?
So in the supervised setting, we have these labels, right? In reinforcement learning, you don't have labels, but what you do is you let the artificial intelligence play with itself. And when an outcome is reached, whether you know the AI won or lost, you use that outcome to basically improve the artificial intelligence algorithm.
So if we think simplistically about what reinforcement learning is, it's the AI is playing itself.
Yeah, you can think about, you know, action and reward kind of thing. Like, you know, one field where reinforcement learning can be readily applied. There are other fields like, you know, robotic, you know, how do you move an arm or how do you drive? Like even the self-driving car example, you can use reinforcement learning. As long as the car does not crash, you don't, you know, penalize the system.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess in the robotics case, you're trying to get the arm to do some very specific things, like pick up this object without breaking it, you know, and if it does that successfully, then that's good. If it doesn't, well, you penalize it and it tries again. At one point during the documentary, it talks about AlphaGo having three parts, a policy network, tree search, and value network. Help us understand like what these three aspects are.
So when we are playing a game, we have a set of choices available to us. What the policy network does is, given the state of the game, it defines the moves that will improve its likelihood of winning the game. From there, you can either select that move and play that move against your opponent. Or what you can do is you can think about is what would the opponent play if I play that move, right? So you start simulating the possible scenarios from that move.
Okay.
So that is what the policy network does. The policy network simply tells you what move I can play next. And from that move on, what are the other possible moves that the opponent can play? And from that move, what the opponent played, like effectively, you're looking like, 2 moves ahead, 10 moves ahead, 100 moves ahead of, you know, the current board position. And you're simulating these use cases. You're trying to optimize your chances of winning given the current state of the board by looking far ahead into the game.
Okay. So you just described the tree search aspect, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's right. So that is a tree search approach. The algorithm basically looks ahead. And the policy network just gives you the possible moves that you can make at a given state. Mm-hmm. And the third part of it is the value network, which tells you, given the current state, what are the chances that I would win?
Yeah. Okay. So if I were to try to summarize what you just said, it would be the policy network looks at all the possible next moves. So there's a universe of next moves that a high-level Go player might make because it's got database of every possible game every professional has played. Then it simulates every one of those moves, and that's the tree search. It simulates every one of those moves and tries to understand what might happen next, and then what happens next and what happens next. So it almost plays many different games. It's trying to predict the future. So the tree search is looking into what this particular move means and all the different various futures that it might create. And then the value network is like, of all those possible futures, there's a certain probability of win. And so it's trying to hit the move that's going to give it the highest probability of win in the future. So these are kind of the three aspects of how it decides what to do next. Is that a fair summary?
That sounds correct, yes.
Okay. I know this is not your domain, but if you were to guess, these three aspects, do you feel that they take the same amount of processing time to do? Roughly one-third, one-third, one-third? Or do you think AI is spending more time in one of these aspects than the other?
So the numbers that were provided by the AlphaGo team in their paper is the tree search is the most expensive process. Mm-hmm. At every point in the tree, you're running these AIs to determine the policy at that stage, and you're computing the probability of winning, right?
Yep.
And just to give you like a ballpark idea, it's around like 3 milliseconds for each policy network at each step to generate the policies.
Okay. If Go takes a minute to make a decision on a move, is it spending 80% of that minute in tree search? Do you have a sense of like proportionally where most of the computing is being done?
So they would be using 100% of that in tree search. If you look at it in a hierarchy, right? So tree search is at the top, and at the bottom, what's doing that tree search are these policy network and the value network. To a different perspective, we can say that most of the work that's doing this tree search is done by the policy network. Most of the time is taken by this policy network because it's slow. And then you have this value network that runs fast per node.
Okay, all right. So the main operation is the tree search because you're looking into the future. But what guides what it's searching for is the policy network and the value network.
Correct.
There's another factoid that they mentioned during the documentary was that AlphaGo looks 50 to 60 moves ahead, which is incredible. If you think about what a human is doing to be able to compete with AlphaGo, the humans must be doing that at some level as well, you know? So it's really what I find the most fascinating in our conversations about AI, Maruf, is just what it reveals about humans and how you get a sense of like how amazing our minds are. So that's how it makes its decision. I thought maybe we'd do a little bit of a sidebar on how AlphaGo compares to these game-playing AIs that came before. What was the state of the art before AlphaGo, and what makes AlphaGo different?
Before AlphaGo, you had algorithm that played the game Go. This particular algorithm does the research part of it, but in a brute force way.
Hmm. Okay.
At every position, it evaluates exponentially large board positions. But then it was not sufficient to be the world champion.
Oh, interesting. It's really mostly the supervised learning that trains the policy network because you're giving it all these games that other Go players has. So it kind of knows every game of Go that's ever been played by a professional player that's been recorded. So I see how that could give AlphaGo an incredible edge over the previous versions. The previous versions was missing that entire aspect. What was the state-of-the-art chess-playing game before this?
So the chess-playing game Deep Blue uses a similar tree search approach in a very brute-force
right. Okay.
way. It has rules.
So this is a Deep Blue. I think this was the IBM Correct. Project, right, from a while back. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so this was the IBM project, and it was one of the first ever computer programs to win against humans at a complicated game like chess. This happened around 1997. And what they did was they designed these specialized chips that can crunch a lot of numbers. The algorithm basically searched through this tree of possible moves, and it evaluated the value at each point in the tree, whether the computer would win or the human would win. So in essence, it would do something similar to what AlphaGo does, but it just did it in a very brute force way. It just had like a lot of if-else statements and a lot of heuristics that were developed at that point of time.
Okay. So would it be correct to say it's also missing this policy network component? Do you know offhand if they trained it on previous games?
There was no training at that point of time. So they just used like a very brute force method to evaluate the board. They didn't have like a policy network saying what way is the most probable move to play. they just evaluated the board at different positions till the clock hits the...
I mean, would you even call it AI? What makes that AI versus it's just a fancy algorithm that is, uses a lot of compute power? Like
in the industry, it's called like good old-fashioned AI.
good old-fashioned AI. Right. Oh, that's funny. Okay, I'm not going to force you to define that. So maybe we can go through the plot of the movie, which is the journey of the AlphaGo team developing this AI and playing against world-class players. The first story they tell is a story with Fan Hui, who is a European champion, the first high-level player AlphaGo played publicly. Fan Hui really isn't taking this thing seriously because the only Go programs he's seen have been these basic programs, which he can handily beat. He completely underestimates it, and he gets beaten 5 games out of 5. Really devastating for him. Was there an inflection point that allowed AlphaGo team to build something at this level? Like, what innovations happened that allowed them to create something like this?
I would imagine, you know, more data and how they train their value networks, how they had to evolve over time to do these complex evaluations and come back with the single possible move. I think in the paper, they mentioned that just improving the policy network by 5 or 10% meant a big difference in how they did research and made a big difference in the outcome of the game. It could either beat amateur versus, you know, it could now beat the world champion. So that is the difference.
Ah.
So coming up with these very accurate policies, doing that research would enable the network to look ahead like in the order of 50 or 60, right? That would give it a much more competitive advantage.
Hmm. So would you say that the AlphaGo team kind of used the state of the art of AI at the time and they just tweaked it for this particular use case and application?
That's correct. Yes. Just to give you statistics, Deep Blue could think like 15 moves ahead, and that was enough.
I'm sorry,
to
15.
That's correct. Yes, 1-5 moves ahead in the game of chess to beat the world champion. But if look ahead like 6 or 7 moves, it would not make it there. So that is the big differentiation factor. Like, you know, how deep can you look in the tree and how well can you evaluate a given position, whether you're going to win or lose?
Yeah. The game of Go also, there's more possible moves. So the fact that you need to look 50 to 60 moves ahead, I'm assuming it's also a factor of how complex possibilities are now, or how many, what's the total space you're searching. It's a much larger space, so you've got to look further ahead.
That's absolutely correct. Yes, you need to look further down in the tree. 10 or 15 would not be sufficient in the game of Go.
Yeah.
You would need to simulate much more, you know, moves of higher quality.
Okay, so if we move further in the plot of the movie, now they've recruited Fan Hui to actually be part of the team, which I love as a nice turn of the story where he's now joined the team that beat him to create a better version of AlphaGo for the main event. The main event is when Lee Sedol plays against AlphaGo. And just for comparison, Fan Hui was a European champion, and he was a 2-dan professional, whereas Lee Sedol is a world champion. He's a 9-dan professional. It's not a linear step. You know, Lee Sedol is an order of magnitude better player. He's dominated the Go championships for the last 10 years. He's won 18 championships. He's acknowledged the greatest living Go player. The time between playing Fan Hui and playing Lee Sedol, only 5 months. And everyone thought Lee Sedol would win very easily. Before they left to go play the game in Seoul, they were talking about, is it now time to freeze the code? As engineers, we all know what that means. This critical moment of like, okay, how much is enough? And like, you got to freeze the code because if you start messing with it too close to the ship date, you might break something, you know? So that was a nice software engineering moment. So then now the game is on in Seoul and it's being broadcast, but I'm doubting many Americans watch this thing live because it's just not a popular game in the US. there's a total of 80 million people who did watch, 60 million in China. I don't remember who made the first move, but I remember AlphaGo took like a whole minute to decide what to do. And I'm like, the board is empty. Do you think it decided in the first 1 millisecond and just ran the clock out? What's your sense?
So it was thinking, you know, it was traversing down the tree probably and trying to evaluate all the different board positions when it's empty.
So that makes sense. You would use the same algorithm for move one as move 100. So it's traversing all the different paths and playing out the scenarios. And the professionals, as AlphaGo started playing at Lisa Dole, the comment, AlphaGo is playing like a top professional. AlphaGo is playing very aggressively. AlphaGo doesn't know itself is playing aggressively, but it's how we interpret it. If you give the training data of like all the moves a top professional makes, and if all their moves are very aggressive, then AlphaGo will play aggressively. It's a function of the training data. Is that the right way to look at it?
So the main thing comes down to the decision tree. If the algorithm determines that the aggressive path will lead to the computer winning against the opponent, then it would take that path. What we can conclude from this is that playing those aggressive moves were kind of essential for the algorithm to win, and it thought that that is the best move forward.
At one point, Lisa Dole looks at Ajit. He's the guy representing AlphaGo team, but all he's doing is placing the stones. AlphaGo is telling him where to place the stones. And Lisa Dole looks at Ajit, and it's like, well, you're not going to get any information looking at him. It's a very different mental game when you don't have a person in front of you. I think that's very, I would imagine it's very disturbing because you're not getting any feedback. Fan Hui made this really incredible statement that AlphaGo was kind of like a mirror, seeing yourself, because you're the person giving the input and the game's giving you feedback. So really, AlphaGo is a reflection. I mean, what do you think of that sort of statement?
So when you're playing with AlphaGo, you're seeing yourself.
That's what he's saying, yeah.
Because that's like an order of magnitude higher than what I can understand.
We'll have to be a little bit AI that can parse.
We'll have to be a little deep.
Parse that statement.
We have to ask the AI.
What I liked about that statement is like when you play AI, it reveals to you how you play. Let's see. So after game one, AlphaGo wins, and there's a press briefing after the game, and Lisa Dole congratulates the AlphaGo team very graciously for creating such an amazing program. After game one, Lisa Dole realizes this is unlike any other Go program that's ever been created. He comes back for game two, and there's a moment, move 36, where Lisa Dole decides he wants to take a smoke break. Lisa Dole walks away. Then AlphaGo places a stone for move 37 because it doesn't need to take a smoke break. Move 37 baffles all the commentators. One commentator says it's an unthinkable move. Like no human Go player would ever choose that move. Chris, one of the leaders of AlphaGo, says, I thought it was a mistake because no one could figure out this move. They all commented on the fact that what they thought they saw was an original move. And so Lisa Dole comes back and everyone is waiting to see what's going to happen. His expression was so interesting. It was a look of pure shock and confusion. But I don't know if you noticed this, but then he smiled a little bit. And then he freaked out again because he's now in deep contemplation about what he needs to do. And I thought that that was such a beautiful reaction of like first shock, but then he smiled because he's like, I'm seeing something incredible. Later on, when he's interviewed about the move, he said that move changed his opinion of the game. That he believed that surely it has to be a creative, he's playing with a creative entity. It's a creative move. And in his words, it was a beautiful move. someone that holds this game so dear to his heart, that moment was a moment of creativity and beauty. And that's why he smiled. So this move is fascinating to me. This is not a move that AlphaGo would have seen before. So tell us a little bit about how it could come up with a move like this if it's not something it's seen before.
So the magic is in research and the level of depth that you can see far ahead. Think of comparing AlphaGo with us humans. You know, we have certain principles and we have certain high-level representation, right? Like if you see a board or if you see a game state in a certain way, we simulate to a certain level of depth and we know that if we play a certain move, then the opponent may not have any chance to play against it. We know that particular move is going to give us an edge against the opponent. So AlphaGo does something similar, but it does it at a very high level of depth. And that's how these novel moves are made available to AlphaGo and not to humans.
What I don't understand is if it's mostly selecting from an encyclopedia of professional Go player moves, and it's just trying to calculate the probability. In this case, a professional player might play these 10 places and is doing the tree search to figure out probability of win. In my mind, it would just pick from those 10 moves. But based on the commentary, they're saying like no professional player would ever play. So it's not choosing from a move that a professional Go player would make. A professional Go player would never make that move. So what am I not understanding about the algorithm that allows it to make this kind of unique move versus playing something that is what a professional player might have played in the past?
The move generation is beyond our understanding at the moment, like, you know, how these algorithms come up with these probability maps. So that is something that's magical about this.
Okay. So then it means that it's not just calculating what a professional player would do. It's like basically based on the board position, searching every game in the past, there's like 10 moves that a professional Go player might make. But it's not evaluating just those 10 moves. It's probably evaluating those plus another, 50, 100 moves. It's evaluating way more moves than a professional player might make. And so there may be a move that's outside of what a professional player might consider, that it's not just drawing from a portfolio of accepted professional Go moves, right?
That's correct.
The AlphaGo team member mentioned that in a post-analysis, it asked AlphaGo the probability that a human would have played that same move. It said it's a 1 in 10,000 probability. So I'm just thinking like what this reveals about the fallacies of human thinking. A Go player has a certain heuristics, and if there's a move that is outside of that heuristic, we may be blind to these moves. Do you think that's also going on?
That's correct. Yeah, we have a sense of heuristics, and as we develop and as we become professional at something, we usually tend to play with our own style, right? We have our own style. We have our own principles that we use. But AlphaGo has some sort of uniqueness where it's not only able to play in a very principled way, but it's also able to evaluate other positions where we humans would immediately discard. So that particular move, if you ask any Go player at that particular state of the board, you know, you would not like explore that particular position as much as the algorithm would do.
Do you think you can tweak the game to really exploit this? Or do you think this is just unpredictable? Like you can, the programmers go in and say, okay, we want more of this to happen. And let's go tweak the algorithms to make sure this kind of stuff happens more. Or is this completely an emergent thing that you can actually design a system to do, but it's an emergent property of the system?
The things that are under your control are incentivizing the network to find novel pathways that humans might not have considered and not prematurely saying, hey, this is not going to work. But you don't know when those moves are going to come out. So that's out of your control.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not likely that the AlphaGo team, based on move 37, could go in and further enhance the algorithm to make it happen more. It's just an emergent property of the system that they've designed with the incentives they've put in place.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Right. These movements really shake us as humans, though, because it feels like you're playing an intelligence. You're playing something that's creative. So Lisa Dole loses game 2 as well, and he loses game 3. So that's 3 straight losses or 3 straight wins for AlphaGo. And of course, that means that Lisa Dole can't win the series. You know, he's lost 3 games in a row. These are only 5 games. So from a tournament perspective, he's already lost. Now he's just playing for humanity, which I thought that was a really cool thing, because now the reason why he plays a game 4 is very different than what motivated him from 1 through 3. He comes in game 4 and is more relaxed, and it looks like he just feels lighter. And he plays a little bit more conservatively, which is his normal style. And there's this moment of the game where AlphaGo plays a stone. It's around move 77, and it's up to Lisa Dole's turn as move 78. And all the commentators are saying they don't see a move. And then Lisa Dole plays a stone, and this is the famous move 78 that Lisa Dole plays in game 4. It shocks everyone because Lisa Dole has also found a magic move that no one else could see. And in the back room of AlphaGo, they said that that move caused the win weight to drop immediately 8%, which is a huge drop based on just one move. That move gave Lisa Dole an advantage. They said the search depth goes to 95. What's the difference between search depth and moves? I'm assuming search is 50 moves ahead typically, but is that the same thing as search depth?
Yeah, that's the same thing. So you're searching like, you know, how deep in the game, how far ahead you're looking.
When the programmers said it, they were shocked it was going so deep. But why is it just trying to find a way to recover? Like, what's that an indication of?
I would imagine the system is going way deeper. It's trying to find something better. If the current move option that it has is not sufficient, it tries to like explore more and more options.
Oh, I see. It's not finding a good answer. So
it's not finding any good answers, right?
It searches deeper in the hopes that there's an answer that maybe you can win in 50 moves, but maybe it reveals that you can win in 95 moves.
Correct.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's thinking much more deeper this time.
Yeah, thinking deeply because, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. There's this fear that AlphaGo is becoming delusional. If it goes into this unfamiliar territory, it becomes very unpredictable what it will do, apparently. Their biggest fear is not losing. Their biggest fear is losing in a stupid way, you know? So explain to me how an AI can become delusional and start doing things that might be a little bit stupid. You know, a professional Go player, like if it gets boxed into a corner, he or she is still going to continue to play and they will lose gracefully. They're not going to just randomly put a stone on the board. So tell me a little bit more about this, because it seems like this is a very big fear of the team, that the AI might get delusional. And then actually the move that AlphaGo picks after move 78, people say it's a laughable move. No human would do this. It's a stupid move. So explain to me how something with so much processing power behind it could go into this kind of a state. I'm asking you to speculate a bit.
So if I were to speculate, at the given situation, it's not able to produce good policies. And, you know, when you're doing the tree search, you're not getting like a good answer. And it's trying to do very hard on the tree search and trying to come up with a good solution. I think we can compare this to something we talked at in an earlier episode with adversarial attacks. Mm-hmm. If somebody wears a different kind of shirt and the pattern looks a little bit off, then the person is not detected. We make small changes to the input and the network just outputs something pretty random. So in this case, what would have happened is that since the current board position was not well extracted by the AI, it gave out really bad possible moves. And doing a tree search on like a really bad set of moves would eventually give you like really bad result.
I see. Okay, so maybe Lisa Dole created a unique board position, right? Basically, move 78 created a completely new board position. And so there isn't a database you can search on if it's a completely new board position. And so it's like garbage in, garbage out. You're doing tree search on just some terrible options. Like another commentator trying to explain what happened, and they're like, maybe Lisa Dole made the game so complicated that the AI cannot evaluate it. That's probably not what happened, right? Like, it's not about complexity. It's more about, it's a novel board position, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. It's like the example you're using in the adversarial network where you're trying to fool a, you know, facial recognition AI, and you just wear a funky looking t-shirt, and now the AI is fooled because you've created this new thing that it doesn't know what to do with. And so it'll output something crazy. So eventually for game four, AlphaGo resigns. I felt so much emotion when this happened. I really wanted Lisa Dole to win. He wins game four, and I was so happy. What was your feeling in this game four? Were you rooting for AlphaGo because you're an AI engineer, or did you want Lisa Dole to win?
Yeah, I felt really good for Lisa Dole.
Yeah. So in this move, the AlphaGo developers also queried AlphaGo the probability of that move by a human opponent. AlphaGo said that only 1 in 10,000 humans would have made that move. So it was not a scenario it was obviously concerned about, because no human would do that. And so it's just so beautiful, the symmetry of AlphaGo, an AI coming out with a 1 in 10,000 move that stumped the human player, and then the human player coming up with a 1 in 10,000 move that stumped the AI. I was thinking about how to beat AI. The way you would try to outsmart AI is you give it a scenario you don't think it's ever seen before. Is that a simplistic way of thinking about how to kind of strategize against AI?
Yeah, that's one of the weaknesses of AI, is giving a very novel example or something that sort of messes up with the system itself that gives out random output.
So let's go into game five, which is the last game. What's interesting about this game is that there's a point where people stop understanding what AlphaGo is doing. Almost the entire game, the commentators could not understand AlphaGo's board position. They thought AlphaGo's moves were weird, strange. In the back room where the developers were watching the game unfold, they also had this fear that AlphaGo was delusional. As a developer, you don't know if AlphaGo is delusional, right? Until the very end.
That's interesting. So it's just from the outcome of the system is where we would know that it's doing something crazy, not before.
Outcome meaning when the game completes. One of the AlphaGo leaders says, hey, you know, we are not good enough Go players to understand if this was a good move or bad move.
Correct.
If it's losing and doing stupid things, it's probably delusional. If it's not losing but doing things that look strange, it may not be delusional, right?
It's very difficult to understand whether the program is functioning the way it should, because we don't know how the program would function under the hood.
So there's these things that it does. The commentator called those some slack moves. The moves don't seem necessary. There seems to be better moves not taken by AlphaGo. They call it lazy, but I'm just assuming these are moves that don't seem to improve AlphaGo's position. What do you think about that? How should we interpret those kinds of moves? Why do you think the software would pick those sorts of moves?
I mean, it's trying to build up a position where after maybe 5 or 6 moves, it can play a really good one. First initial moves might be slack moves and then later brilliant one and turn the game upside down.
Can't predict what you're going to do. I mean, it's not really planning. I mean, that's how a human being thinks. You know, like, I'm going to create this trap from a roof. And if he bites, I'm going to get him. Is that how an AI thinks? It's not trying to get into our heads, you know?
So it does not need to get into your head. What it can do is it can simulate the best move that you can play.
Yeah. So it's lining you up for a more major move later based on the possible moves it's giving you.
Correct.
Game 5, it's very confusing for the commentators because it's a bunch of slack moves that don't seem to be making much of a sense. But AlphaGo ends up winning in the end by a few points. The explanation given in the documentary is that AlphaGo is programmed to win, but it doesn't matter what margin it wins by. It doesn't try to weight its decisions on winning by more points. It just needs to win by one. So I'm inferring a bit. They didn't say this directly, but if you play a game only to win by 1 point, I'm assuming it looks very different than if you're trying to win by 10 points, if you're trying to win decisively, because then a lot of moves may not make a lot of sense because they're not giving you a clear dominant, you know, advantage. It's just giving you like a tiny little incremental advantage. And human beings are not designed to play like this because we don't think about winning in such small margins. We want to build confidence in ourselves as we play. So we want a strong board position for as long as we can maintain. These slack moves are incrementally gaining advantage that we have a hard time perceiving because we cannot finally calculate the probabilities. And so to me, this is a way AI can win against humans because it doesn't need to win by a large margin. AI might be very good at winning by a little bit, and humans may not be very good at winning by a little bit. What do you think?
Right. Yeah, we are trying to like maximize the points by which we win just to have that safety factor. But AI has so much computational power that it can risk winning by a fraction of a point. So it is sort of confident that taking this path, it's going to win.
Yeah, okay. That's actually an interesting way of looking at it is it's a safety margin.
Safety.
We want a lot of safety margin, whereas if you can calculate the odds, maybe you can work with a slimmer safety margin.
Correct. Because the rate at which we make errors in the game, we may not know. And the safety margin is there to help us. It's just like a cushion.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it because so we want as wide a margin as possible because 10 moves ahead, we may make a poor decision. Whereas AI is like, I'm never going to make a poor decision. So I don't need that kind of a safety margin. So it opens up kind of what things AI might be good at. Basically, the thing is with AI, you can assume perfect execution, you know, whereas humans, we can't assume perfect execution. So we need way more margins. Maybe we'll end it with this thought, this idea that by playing AI, there's an entire different style of play that could be invented because of this. This idea of like winning by a slimmer margin and how you would play very differently if your goal is only to win by like a point or two. Do you think there'll be new styles of play inspired by what AlphaGo has done?
Right, yeah, it's going to inspire a lot of ways that you can play a particular game. And you can always pick up new patterns and pick up new things that you wouldn't otherwise playing against humans. So it's going to help us get better at our games as well.
Yeah, a human player, as part of his or her training to play against AlphaGo, will make them a better player. The games that human players play against human players could be very different. All the news stories are about, oh, how do we make AI smarter? But I'm like, way more fascinated with how AI can make us smarter and make us more aware of how we think.
That's correct. Yeah, I shared the same thought.
All right, Maruf. Well, thank you so much for joining me again. Every time I speak with you, I always understand the subject a little bit more after our conversation. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Tony. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us at the Super Prompt Podcast. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to this podcast and leave us a 5-star review. See you next week. at SuperPrompt.